Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across this great country. If it's Tuesday, Cleveland, Ohio comes front and center. Move over the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Move over the Jake, the Q, whatever you want to call it, the Richfield Coliseum, if that's still there in Richfield. This is American Sports History Podcast, hosted by my good brother, friend, mentor, Peter Ray. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing it. 347-205-9631. Goes by quick, 30 minutes, so catch the archive on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Podcast platforms powered by Mancini Media. So, it's more of him, less of me. Let me lay the red carpet, put the podium in its place, hand over the mic. First of all, Peter, how are you? Second of all, how can you be reached? Third of all, we're going to go into a little history here, blast from the past, and a great guest, another legend coming through Ohio.
Hi, Mark. I'm doing very well. I have a YouTube channel. It's my name, Peter J. Ray, R-E-A, and you're absolutely right about tonight's guest. He's the owner of the Scout Hub, CEO of Blylevin's Marketing Consultancy, former CMO at Baseball Factory. He played 7.5 years of pro baseball, 8 years an MLB scout. He was involved with the baseball indoor training facility, and he worked in the corporate sports world. And he's the son of one of the greatest MLB players of all time, Bert Blylevin. Welcome to the show, Mr. Todd Blylevin.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here and talk some baseball and whatever else we end up talking about.
First of all, Todd, can you give us, you were born into baseball from the time you were, because your father was playing MLB in 1970, and so you were, your dad was in the majors. So can you give us an overall of your life? And you've done so much in the sports world, particularly baseball. Can you give us an overall view of your life in baseball?
Yeah, I'll try to keep it as brief as possible, although, it's my dad played for 23 years. So I would say that, I was born in the game. My dad was with the Twins at the time. And, we moved down to Texas when he was traded to the Rangers. And that was really, kind of the first years I remember going to the ballpark with my dad, playing in the father-son games, being around the clubhouse and the players, being on the field. And then when he got traded to Pittsburgh, I think I was about 5 or 6. And, that whole season in 1979 with We Are Family, with, the great Willie Stargell and Dave Parker, Omar Marino, on and on was the roster of just amazing players, amazing talented men that, formed a team and a unit. We Are Family and won the World Series in 1979. And I was able to be a part of that, as a bat boy and be around those awesome, I called them my brothers, my uncles, my family, and they took care of me and it was just so much fun. But, as the years went on, I had an opportunity to stop through Cleveland with my dad and be a part of some great teams, although the record didn't reflect it. Some amazing players that played on those teams, the Joe Carters and the Mel Halls and the Rick Mannings and on from there. And then on to the Minnesota Twins, and where my dad won the World Series again in 1987 with some other amazing players, the Kirby Puckets and Tom Bernanskis and Kent Herbecks and, Frank Viola's, where, I had an opportunity to sit and listen and to him and all these great players and coaches as they threw their bullpens or prepared for their nightly, battles with other teams. And, and then my dad ended his career with the Angels in the late 80s and early 90s, where then I became a professional player in 1993 until 99, and then became a major league scout in 2000 until 2009. So I've been in baseball pretty much my entire life and have enjoyed every minute of it. I never took it for granted. Every time a player would want to play catch with me out in the field or just spend time with me, I cherished it. And I really, really, appreciate all those memories.
So I'm going to throw some names at you. Well, first of all, yeah, can you talk about your work in the corporate sports world and in the sports technology?
Yeah, so about 10, 11 years ago, you know, I was running an indoor training facility after my scouting days. You know, I wanted to be home with my wife and my young kids and get a chance to go to, you know, my son's ball games. My dad didn't get a chance to see me play a whole lot outside of the Major League Stadium. So, you know, I really wanted to be there for my kids and watch them, you know, grow up through their younger years. And I got an offer to get into the corporate sports world working for some pretty amazing companies, Skills, which, you know, runs a lot of training products globally, and then United Sports Brands, which owns Shock Doctor, Cutters, McDavid, and others. And I worked for Baseball Factory and a baseball event company, and I consulted with you know, numerous technology companies in sports and analytics. And I worked for Pocket Radar, which is a radar speed measurement device used in all sport, but primarily popular in baseball and softball. And then I own a sports technology and development company called the Scout Hub that we provide coaches software to help them evaluate players, and the players receive player pages that they can use for recruiting purposes. So, yeah, I really enjoy it. I love being around sports. I love giving back. You know, my days of playing are over, and I've got a son that's a 17-year-old switch-hitting catcher, third baseman, that is looking forward to an amazing summer this summer as he goes out and competes in front of a lot of college coaches that are interested in him. And, you know, I want to make sure I give everything I can to him and help his recruiting efforts like I would with his friends and any player that wants help. So, you know, it's that's what we're supposed to do, you know, is help others.
Oh, absolutely. I'd like to throw some names at you and anything that comes to mind, starting with the 1979 Pirates. Willie Stargell, Rennie Stennett, Bill Madlock, Bill Robinson, Omar Moreno, Dave Parker, Phil Garner, Manny Sanguian, John Candelaria, Kent Tekulve, and Jim Bibby. You probably could talk for weeks about those 10 guys.
Oh, geez. Yeah. I mean, you know, Jim Bibby was just an amazing man. You know, big old Jim Bibby. He could hold 5 baseballs in his hand. He ended up being my pitching coach when I was on a tour through the Pirates organization and got a chance to learn more from him. But you talk about, you know, Willie Stargell. I remember my first hitting, you know, lesson really on field. I was there at Pirate Stadium. I'm there standing next to Willie Stargell, and he's teaching me how to stand in the box and how to move and how to, you know, get some rhythm to you. And he's shaking his hands. You know, remember he would get the big old bat. I think he swung a 35-inch bat. So he would, you know, move that bat from left to right, point it towards the pitcher, and come back. He'd do a little shake. And then he'd get into that baseball, and I sat there. I wanted to be Willie Stargell so bad. And then, you know, guys like Dave Parker. I mean, every time I saw Dave, he acted like a big old gym to me. You know, he'd hold up his big old strong cobra-like arms, and I would swing on his arms. And I mean, that team was just such an amazing group of individuals. I remember being, you know, I think I was 7 years old, and Phil Gardner and Tim Foley ended up buying me a little army set with, you know, the gray and the green army men and the little tanks. And I remember we were at Pirates Field. I believe it was either in Philly or it was in Pittsburgh. And we were on the actual mound. And I had Willie Stargell, Tim Foley, Dale Barra. I had all these guys playing army with me. You know, they were all moving the tanks and trucks, and I remember just kind of sitting up for a second thinking, this is the coolest thing ever. I have my idols playing with me on the field, on the mound, and it was just an amazing, amazing time. What a way to kick off, you know, just the love of baseball, which I cherish today. It was awesome.
Okay, the 1981 Cleveland Indians, Mike Hargrove, Dwayne Kuiper, Toby Hara, Rick Manning, Andre Thornton, Joe Charbonneau, Jerry Dibzinski, Len Barker, and Rick Waits.
Wow. Well, so Toby Hara was I thought, you know, a tremendous third baseman. I remember he used to, you know, take me during batting practice and, you know, on balls. And then, you know, during batting practice, he always had me stand behind him about 10 feet just because I was still, I think I was about 10, 11 maybe at that time. And, you know, I mean, you got Rick Manning, amazing center fielder. You know, right fielder, he kind of went all over the place, but he'd run through a wall for you. And then you had your Mel Halls that I remember. Mel was a guy that always had his batting gloves sticking out of his back pockets. And as he ran, they always waved. And so I remember being a kid, a little league, going back after you know, that first year spending time with Mel Hall, and I had my batting gloves sticking out, and one of the players asked, well, how come you have your bat, you know, you have two batting gloves on to hit, and you have two batting gloves sticking out of your back pocket? And I said, that's because when I hit the ball, you're going to see me waving at you as I'm running by. And, yeah, it's just again, I know they didn't win a lot of ball games, but they sure did have a lot of fun in that clubhouse.
The 1982 Cleveland Indians, Jack Percante, Miguel Delaney, Von Hayes, Alan Bannister, and Rick Sutcliffe.
Well, so Rick Sutcliffe and my dad ended up being, you know, great friends, and they are still today. They were roommates. I think when you think about, you know, the Von Hayes and Lenny Barkers and I don't know, remember all the names you were just saying, you know, Chris Bandos. You know, these are guys that, you know, the Mike Hargroves. I mean, you take a lot of these players, and no offense to the Indians, but I think the dynamic of the team, you take some of those guys, you put them into some different organizations at that time, and I think you've got, you know, guys that probably would have made all-star teams. I just remember Mike Fishlands, and like you said, the Toby Harris. It's just a great, you know, those guys were professionals. And Neil Heaton's from the left side. You know, watch a guy like him throw a bullpen. I mean, you know, the control and command that he had at that time was just awesome. But I remember my dad and Lenny Barker, you know, Rick Sutcliffe. I mean, you got three amazing starting pitchers right there that, you know, I know, and I think it was in 82, 83. I can't remember what the record was. But I don't think they came in last place that year. But, yeah, it was just a great time in Cleveland.
The 1983 yeah. Indians, Manny Trio, Julio Franco, Pat Tabler, Gorman Thomas, George Vukovich, Bake McBride, Broderick Perkins, Juan Eichelberger, and Dan Spillner.
Wow. Okay. So throw me in the fire here. So let's see. 83, that was, I'm trying to go back on that. I know the Julio Franco, I mean, geez, one of the, you know, the oldest players to play the game in terms of, you know, longevity. I remember watching him, you know, see, the whole thing is at this age, this is where I really started to study the players. I remember being in spring training when, like, Pat Tabler and those guys, the George Vukoviches that I ended up playing for when I was in the Pirates organization. But when I was a kid, I remember these guys coming into spring training just green. I mean, they were nervous. They're around guys, you know, players like my dad that had years at the major league level, successful years, you know, these veterans like Rick Sutcliffe and whatnot. And you had guys like Julio Franco and the Pat Tablers and, you know, guys like that just trying to make a team. And that Cleveland team was that them and the Minnesota Twins were probably the two teams where anybody could make a team because they were, you know, generally in last place. There was a lot of holes to fill, and you could really feel the dynamic. You could feel the energy, the nervousness, the passion in the clubhouse, you know, especially come cut day, when, you know, a lot of players were let go. I mean, you could just really feel the tension. in those particular clubhouses. And I think that's what made it even more fun was, you know, you could tell there were a lot of guys in that clubhouse that loved to play the game and wanted it and knew they had an opportunity with an organization like Cleveland or Minnesota.
The 1984 Indians, Tony Bernazard, Brooke Jacoby, Brett Butler, Joe Carter, Otis Nixon, Steve Comer, and Ernie Camacho.
I mean, again, here's some names that are absolutely amazing. I remember, you know, Joe Carter and I, you know, he was one of those guys that, again, like a Dave Parker or a Willie Stargell, I looked up to. You know, just a class act individual, number one, in his story of, you know, growing up in the Bay Area and whatnot. You know, I think just his whole approach, his mentality, his love for where he was at in the game at that time, the thankfulness that he had for Major League Baseball to give him an opportunity to go out and play, you know, the game that he loved and showcase his skills. You know, just a tremendous athlete. The Brooke Jacobys, again, that same from that same blood, like, you know, get out there and play hard-nosed baseball. And I may not be the best player in the world, but I'm going to give everything I have to beat you. And just that mentality of never giving up was just awesome to be around.
The 1985 Indians, well, I mentioned Pat Tavler, Kurt Wardle, and Vern Rule.
So Vern Rule ended up being being a pitching coach in college. I was my dad's roommate, or one of them, and they became, you know, really good friends. Unfortunately, we lost Vern ways back, but he was a college pitching coach that I followed around. And when I was going through my recruiting stages, I had a lot of full ride offers to just about anywhere in the country, and I chose Cal State Fullerton at the time because Vern was there. And I really wanted to learn under the teachings of Mr. Vern Rule. I thought he was an amazing coach, amazing approach to the game. Somebody that didn't have a lot of, you know, he wasn't a Randy Johnson. He didn't have that blazing fastball, but he had the pitchability and he stayed in the game for a long time and became a great, great coach. And yeah, Vern Rule. What an amazing, not only off the field, but just a class act individual, a great, great man. Yeah.
Your father moved on, came back to Minneapolis in 1985. Kent Herbeck, Kirby Puckett, Tom Brunansky, Roy Smalley, Ron Washington, Frank Viola, and Ken Schramm.
I can't say anything, you know, better about the twin. You know, the Kirby Puckett, Kent Herbeck, Tom Brunansky, you know, the Kirby Puckett time and getting a chance to meet him and play around with him, listening to him smile and laugh. I mean, you talk about a Derek Jeter type ambassador for the game of baseball at that time, Kirby Puckett, you know, he was baseball. I mean, it gives me goosebumps just talking about Puck because I think, you know, the way he hustled about the game, the way he took, you know, it was game time. When that bell rung, Kirby Puckett had the football mentality where he wanted to win like nobody else's business, but he did it in a way with a smile on his face, and he just competed. And, you know, just such a great, great player, Johnny Hustle type guy. You know, I mean, just amazing to be around.
The 86 Twins, Billy Beane.
Billy Beane. Well, I mean, heck, you know, I think Billy's obviously was a great player himself. I remember him, you know, walking through the clubhouse and a young player, and my dad and him really got along, and he was, you know, a really nice guy, and I just remember him being super polite. And obviously, his post-baseball career, has put him into somewhat of a legend status in terms of his entrepreneurship within the game and forward thinking on analytics and whatnot. Some may disagree, but I think he brought a different element to the game thought process, which I think is innovative. But yeah, great player.
87 into 88 Twins, Don Baylor, Joe Niekro, Steve Carlton, and Roy Smith.
So I remember watching Steve Carlton out in right field before every game, before anybody got there. Steve would bring out, you know, he'd have a cardboard box or he'd have some sort of mat he laid down. He'd put his boxing shoes on, and he would go out to right field, and he would do like a yoga-type Pilates piece out there. It's really peaceful. You could see him out there getting his zen on and everything, and it was just a lot of fun to watch, and obviously an amazing pitcher. And really cool to watch him and my dad. And then you bring up Joe Niekro. And I remember Joe got caught with an emery board in his right pocket during a game. And it was really funny because you had the umpires came out to check his glove, and Kent Herbeck was standing next to him. And you had some like Gary Gaetti and some of the players, Lombardozzi was in there in this circle. And he went in to check his pockets. And so as he went into his back pocket, he reaches in and he tries to throw the emery board, to his right. Well, it landed right at Kent Herbeck's feet, and Herbeck tried stepping on it, and you saw the umpire. It was just all in slow motion. It was hilarious. The umpire looks down. He sees the emery board, and Herbeck tried stepping on it, but Joe Niekro ended up, you know, getting kicked out of the game. And I think he was on David Letterman like 24 hours later, came out with a big sander. He had sand, you know, paper attached to him, and I mean, it was a big joke. But I'll tell you, I mean, what a guy that could pitch, could compete, could control the knuckleball like his brother. You know, just an amazing athlete. And I think, you know, all those guys were pretty cool to be around.
And moving on, your dad moved on to the California Angels in 1989. Lance Parrish, Wally Joyner, Claudel Washington, Brian Downing, and Chuck Finley.
Well, I mean, Chuck Finley to me was, you know, and he also had Jim Abbott too, I believe, on that team. You know, those two guys, I know, you know, they had lockers right next to dad's, and I remember sitting there. I was getting older, so I was going into my high school years at that time, and I remember watching Chuck Finley would just sit by the dugout, and he would lift that big old right leg of his. I mean, he was a mammoth of a man, big, you know, lift his big right leg. And he would work on his balance point, and then he would get down into a throwing position. He would repeat it over and over and over. And I remember Jim Mabbitt ended up, you know, following that same suit. It just showed me that even the best of the best players, because I think Chuck Finley had a great year that year, the best of the best players are still working at their craft. You know, every single night, any chance they can, they're always working on, you know, something to improve themselves. And, of course, I had my dad that I got a chance to watch, you know, go through that every day. But you take advantage of it because it is your dad. But to see guys like that, you know, the Mike Fetters and Willie Frazier's, and you said the Lance Parrish's. I mean, you know, those guys were just amazing athletes. You know, again, another team that bonded and did pretty well.
Yeah. And then near the end of your dad's career, the 90 to 92 Angels, the manager, Doug Rader, Dave Winfield, Scott Bales, and Von Hayes.
Well, yeah, oh, geez. So you had that team itself. I don't know if it was Brian Harvey was on that roster or not, but, yeah, you had, you know, again, the Jim Abbotts, Doug Rader, you know, I mean, great manager in terms of being a player's manager. I think they did fairly well. I don't think they came in last place that year. I don't remember, it was kind of an entertaining year. But, you know, you brought up Brian Downing. I mean, you know, Brian Downing was, you know, a tremendous outfielder, had, you know, great instinct. But I remember him, he was a very serious player. He didn't joke around a whole lot in the dugout. He was more serious, but he was approachable, you know, a great family man. I know one of his sons lives out here in Texas with me. I think he's an officer, but, yeah, what a great team that was.
You know, looking at your career in baseball, these different things you've done, I find very, very impressive and tremendously successful. Do you now, you're the son of one of the greatest baseball players of all time. Did you feel a lot of pressure to succeed being the son of Burt Blyleven?
Yeah, you do. I mean, it's just a it's a natural thing. You know, I mean, I remember pitching in high school, and you know, I'd be on the mound and I'd strike a guy out, and I'd hear in the dugout, you know, "Oh, that's Burt Blyleven's son." And I, you know, at times, I mean, obviously, I'm very proud of what my dad was doing at the time and what he did for in his career. But you know, I was on the mound and I just struck the guy out, and I wanted someone to say, "Oh, that was Todd Blyleven, not Burt Blyleven's son." So there was a lot of that pressure, you know, growing up, but I embraced it because, you know, my dad and I had a great relationship, you know, and he gave me the gift of being around so many great athletes where I learned how to lose. I learned how to win. You know, I learned how to fight for what I want to get. And you know, it there were a lot of life lessons there that I learned, you know, being around those major league players. And so I felt the pressure, obviously. I mean, my dad had the best curveball in baseball next to Sandy Koufax. I didn't have a great – I had a good curveball. I didn't have Burt Blyleven's curveball. I had a good fastball. I had a better changeup. You know, I learned the changeup from Frank Viola, and I had good control and command. And, you know, I got to a high level. I just – I didn't have that Burt Blyleven stuff, and I was okay with that. You know, I love the game. I love the game today, and I know I gave everything I had to it. To try to make it.
Well, and the thing is, you've gone beyond playing. You know, there's more to baseball than just players, and that's the thing I find very impressive. All these other things that you've been doing, you know, in scouting, and then the corporate world, and now this stuff you're doing with helping young fellows to promote themselves, and this stuff you talk about, sports technology. So I find that very, very impressive. So I'm very, very successful.
I appreciate it. Yeah, you know, there is life after sports. It's really hard. I know when I was, you know, after I got done playing, you know, I went through about a year, year and a half of depression, you know, and it, you know, I chose to walk away from the game. I wanted to start a family. I wanted to, you know, you hear it's tough because you're on the road, you're bouncing around from place to place. Your friends are graduating from college. They're starting their careers. They're getting girlfriends, they're, you know, they're getting married. And not to say you couldn't do that when you're playing minor league baseball, but it's tough. And so, you know, I chose to you know, try to live in the real world. And I had a hard time at first until I met my my girlfriend at the time, my wife now for many years. And, you know, she convinced me to maybe do something in sports again because that's where my heart was. And that's when I became a major league scout. And, you know, from there, when I got out of scouting, I didn't know, you know, what I wanted to do other than I wanted to be in sports. And I was given the opportunity to get into corporate space. And I've learned, I've had some amazing people again, like I did growing up, you know, that taught me, you know, the ropes in the corporate space. And I just learned and listened and always appreciated that. And I think, you know, that mentality and that approach goes a long way. You know, I wasn't afraid to ask for help. People naturally want to help people. And, you know, luckily I've just been around some amazing people that have helped me and guided me to where I am today. And I truly am thankful and blessed.
There's a book about Pete Rose called Kostya Kennedy. And he had, the thing that really appealed to me talked about Pete Rose Jr., who I believe played minor league baseball for 20 years and never made, but I thought such a persevering guy, and I think he's managing in the minors. Did you ever meet Pete Rose Jr.? I thought, found him, the whole story of him very, really interesting.
So funny story, Pete Rose Jr. and I used to pal around every time my dad and his and Pete would play against each other. And I was swinging on the dugout one summer, and Pete, you know, Jr. and I were swinging, and I ended up slipping and falling, and the dugouts back then were like, they had wood planks. I ended up breaking my left wrist, and I didn't want the trainer or anybody to tell anybody. My dad was pitching that night, and so about the seventh inning, I'm up in the dugout. You know, I was kind of holding my arm. I was grabbing the bats, but, you know, with one hand, and my dad asked the trainer, "What's wrong with Todd?" And he said, "Birdie broke his arm." Like, nobody told you? He was supposed to tell you. And my dad said, "He did what?" And so he said, "Yeah, Todd's wrist, we think it's broken. He needs to get it x-rayed." But he didn't want to tell you because you're pitching. So anyways, I ended up, you know, he took me, he it exited himself out of the game. We went to the hospital. Sure enough, it was cracked, and came back with a cast. Well, the first person to sign my cast was Pete Rose, and then it was Willie Stargell. And so had this cast, you know, of signatures, but Pete Rose is the first one, and Pete Rose Jr. and I would always joke around about that, you know, that we were swinging in the dugout, and I was the one that fell and broke my arm. So anyways, yeah, good guy.
Have you seen him over the years?
We have not seen each other face-to-face, but, you know, social media, Facebook, and then, of course, with my dad traveling. And I've seen Pete a few times throughout the years, and we always say hello, give each other a hug, you know, remember the old times. It's just like when my dad got inducted in the Hall of Fame, you know, you still see all those players, the Ozzie Smiths and people that you grew up with and that know you and you know them on an uncle-brother basis. And, yeah, it's just one of those things. It's a bonding experience. So,
our guest has been Todd Blylevin, who's had a tremendously successful career in the world of baseball. The time has flown by. The time is gone. Do you have any final words for our audience, Mr. Todd Blylevin?
You know what? Just cherish every minute that you have, that you can take, you know, your left foot and put it in front of the next, and don't ever quit. Enjoy life, and you know, God bless everybody. God bless our country.
God bless America. Thanks so much, Mr. Todd Blylevin, Todd, for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. Wonderful interview.
I appreciate your time. Thank you for having me.
Okay, very good. Thanks again. Dear listener, may the road rise to meet you. May the wind be at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face and rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Good night, everybody. Thanks again, Mr. Todd Blylevin.
Amen. Thank you very much.
Okay.